This is the Sports Reporters.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Robert Wall from HBO's Arliss.
I am Mike Lupica of MLB.com. My new novel for young middle grade readers, Batting Order, will come out on Tuesday. Welcome to this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We generally come to you on Tuesdays and Thursdays and continue a tradition. Mondays and Thursdays. Whatever, Mitch. What is this, a grand jury?
Well, you said generalizes. I don't want to confuse people.
You know
Mondays
what? Okay. Fine. You want to take that attitude? No. So we began
Mike,
this.
Mike, did you bring the donuts?
You know what? Robert knows this. We pulled back the curtain. So when Robert sat down today, Mitch said the great Robert Wall. And I said, how come you never say the great Mike Lupica? When I sit down and I said to Albom that we're like a couple of cops who've been sitting in the same patrol car for too long together.
So I offered to sit in the back and you offered to get the donuts. And I thought that was a reasonable compromise. Meanwhile, we do this show on Mondays and Thursdays. So
okay,
continue.
Fine, whatever. Okay, so we don't have a game to talk about. We have a game to anticipate, which is Game 5 between the Bucks and the Raptors. We will get this, but I, you know, Mitch and Robert, I just thought this was a day to take a step back and appreciate what we are watching with the Golden State Warriors, and to become the first team since Russell's Celtics to make it to 5 NBA finals in a row. And by the way, this is at a time when there was another remarkable stat when LeBron, with a bunch of different teams, made it to 8 finals in a row. But these Warriors, Mitch, do you not think more than any other team, and everybody's got 3-point shooters now, they define the modern game, and they just play the modern game better than anybody. They're unbelievably fun to watch, starting with Steph Curry and Durant. I just think we have to have a full appreciation what they've accomplished before Durant, with Durant, right now without Durant, and the coaching job that Steve Kerr is doing.
Well, the thing I think they do the most is that the 3-point shot is becoming or has become something that other teams go to, turn to, frequently employ. But the Golden State Warriors have woven it into their existence. You never think with them as that. Well, they need a 3-point shot. The guys, they're taking 3-point shots. That is totally part of who they are. And when you think about that, as Bob Ryan would always point out, you get 50% more points when you take those shots. Right. The fact that they can hit them with the stunning regularity that the Splash Brothers do has put them on a level that they're just ahead of everybody else. And you know, the Celtics, they were ahead of everybody else for similar reasons. They had generational talent collected on a team that stayed there for years. Bill Russell being the centerpiece of that, of course, during the whole 10-year stretch. But they did not face the pressures of taking a team apart the way that the Golden State Warriors do almost every season with some kind of free agency. When you mentioned LeBron James, I thought that was a really good point because, yeah, LeBron did 8 finals, but with a bunch of different teams. And it was because of his talent that moved around the board that got them to the finals. Right. They have done it as a team. 5 years with essentially the same team, with Kevin Durant being the big exception to it, and without being pulled apart by all the forces that can pull you apart in today's game. And that's what makes them so remarkable to me.
You know, Mike, you mentioned the modern game, and it's so funny because I watched this team, and everything you say is 100% right. This is the modern game.
And Robert, I don't love the three. I can't, you know, I like the game better without the 3-point shot, but I've had to embrace it with these teams because, as Mitch says, it's so essential to their DNA.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But as far as the game they play, yes, the modern game. But in many ways, I look at them almost as an old school team.
Yeah, they are.
It's like, you know, it's the modern game with an old school approach. This is fun. This is a team. This is a team that you could see Pop loving, that Red Holtzman would have loved.
Yeah.
You know, this is with the exception of Kevin Durant, I don't think they have like a top 2 or 3 draft choice on this team. This is put together. This is the right, you know, we talk about playing baseball the right way. This is a team that now look without Kevin Durant, how they just went through everybody. And then now they got the rest. I think we're just going to have to enjoy and appreciate the greatness of what we're seeing.
Yeah.
It's also it's a lesson for other teams, Mike, about longevity, and make them at least think about keeping a group together and watching that group evolve?
Oh, yeah, Mitch. 100%. It's that's another old school thing about this team. I mean, Draymond and Steph, but just put Durant's a transformative player. Obviously, he's a unique player because of his size and his shooting touch and all that stuff. Okay, but Draymond and Steph and Iguodala, I mean, they are going to be remembered for having marched together at this time through basketball, the way we remember Casey Jones and Sam Jones and Havlicek and Russell and those Celtics teams. No, and that, whoever they play in the finals, Mitch and Bob, and I'll just start by directing this to you, Mitch. I'll watch whoever they play because the Warriors are in the gym. They I believe they will draw us all in as we watch them try to win. Not just their fourth championship in 5 years, but what we all know should be, they should be going for five in a row.
Right. Well, they're arresting. You can't not watch them. I'd watch them play a scrimmage. I don't care. I don't really care if there's an opponent, to be honest with you. But what I said about the longevity thing is interesting, and I don't just mean two superstars, which has been enough of a challenge, witness Oklahoma City, you know, just trying to keep two guys together, or Houston, or anywhere where LeBron goes. I'm talking about keeping Andre Iguodala around. I'm talking about keeping Sean Livingston around.
Yep.
They are a unit. Yes, the other pieces come and go. Bogut has come and gone. DeMarcus Cousins was plugged in, and obviously Durant is the big one. But they've got a core unit that just keeps playing together. That is reminiscent to me, probably because of my geography, of Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman, John Sally.
That's a great
year
analogy.
year after year. Role players as well as superstars. And I think that too many NBA teams, they get to the end of the year and they just want to reshuffle the deck. Okay, let's lose this guy. Let's get rid of this guy. He will cut him and we'll trade him. His salary will go against this. And then we'll move around. The only way to improve is to move all these pieces on the board. And nobody seems to want to stick with the group and say, well, maybe we'll improve as a team if we keep our guys together. And that's what Golden State has done.
Robert, we do this a lot, as you know, on the Sports Reporters podcast, because it's just pure fun. I have in front of me, gentlemen, Steph Curry's draft. Okay. He was the 7th pick. Because when you were saying they don't have a 1, 2, or 3 pick, Curry ought to have been one. All right, you ready? The first pick in that draft, Mitch, was Mr. Blake Griffin. The second pick was Hashim Tabeet, a 7-footer from Connecticut. And I forgot this. The third pick in that draft was James Harden. I completely forgot that he went that high. Tyreke Evans, Ricky Rubio, Johnny Flynn, a point guard from Syracuse. And with the 7th pick for your Golden State Warriors was Steph Curry.
Johnny Flynn?
Yes, sir.
Went before Steph Curry?
Taken by the Timberwolls. Okay?
If I'm not mistaken, don't the Knicks have the 8th pick?
Yeah. No, Robert, I'm watching that draft with my oldest son, Christopher.
I was watching it, too.
Who is a crazed Knicks fan. And in our family, we had literally been watching Steph Curry his entire career at Davidson. I had to get Zach Lupica a Steph Curry jersey when he was like a... So we knew, okay? The world found out when he nearly went to the Final Four that year. And the next pick after Steph was, as you know, Robert, the great Jordan Hill from the University of Arizona.
Yes. Who got fired for ESPN by making controversy. Oh, that's a different hill.
But by the way, Johnny Flynn, if you type in Johnny Flynn's name into Google, this is how brief his... And he had hip surgery, so you got to allow for that. But a musician comes up named Johnny Flynn way ahead.
Well, that's because Johnny does spell it J-O-N-N-Y. But Blake Griffin... He was the one, Mitch. He was the one in that draft. I mean, he was the one sure thing in that draft. And so it always falls into the Bill Goldman. Nobody knows anything.
Right.
But when you look at this team, you're right. Everybody, you've heard me quote Jeff Van Gundy on Steph. He got over himself a long time ago. Everybody knows who they're supposed to be on the Warriors. That doesn't always happen, even with the best units, okay? Iguodala has completely accepted his role. Klay Thompson has completely accepted his role as being the 4th best player when he knows he would go somewhere and probably be the best player. And Steph, and what he's done with his lack of ego. And Durant. I'm telling you, when they stop playing basketball every year, I'm sad just because I don't get to watch them play again until the fall.
Well, as much as the Steph Curry pick 7 thing is kind of stunning, really what made that team draft pick wise was taking Draymond Green 35th in the 2012 Amazing. Draft. Because now I remember that draft, and I remember because we obviously followed Draymond here, and he was a big
force.
Were
you guys surprised if
Absolutely.
Michigan made, oh, you were? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
People,
okay.
Everybody here said, you're kidding me. He's not, he's, he didn't get drafted in the first round because everybody knew what kind of talent he was. And the fact that, it took to the second round in the 35th pick, and he has been as transformational a player for them, and in his way is as critical to that machine running as any other player. I'm not saying he has the natural skill of a Durant or a Steph Curry, whatever, but the machine doesn't work without him. Just as if Dennis Rodman wasn't with those Pistons that I mentioned, they're not winning those games. But no one would say Dennis Rodman could shoot a jumper like anybody there or dribble the ball like anybody else. The only thing he could really do was rebound. But the way that he played was complimentary. And the way that Draymond plays, the energy he brings, the loyalty that he brings, the fierceness that he brings, the explosiveness that he brings, which sometimes backfires like, you know, something out of a Roadrunner cartoon with smoke all over his face. Nonetheless, he is critical, and getting him in the second round, 35th pick, that was their best piece of magic in a draft.
And, you know, Robert, I think that even if Durant leaves, I don't think the Warriors, if Klay Thompson stays, which is a big caveat, okay? But if Klay Thompson chooses to stay, and I'm not saying that they'd go out and get Kawhi, okay? But guess what? If you're Kawhi, that's a pretty attractive destination. I don't think the Warriors are going anywhere anytime soon.
I don't either. Before we wrap, before we move on, you brought up a great point about teams, you know, what they do afterwards. Let's talk a moment about Portland. Where do they go from here?
Well, they need another player. I mean, they need another frontline player.
So if they get Kawhi, what
does
that
do? That's going to be a tough sell. I do. I think
no, I'm sure. But
it's
but
Terry
this is my
Stotts
point.
Is a terrific coach. It's a great organization. It's actually a great town. But they need, a great wingman on that team.
There you go. I mean, I'm saying, but it goes to my point. Where do they go from here? Are they one of these Orlando Magic that's got there for a second and gone? Or, you know, is it, you know, it's like, where do they go from here? You know, that's, it goes right
Robert,
to what you were talking about.
Maybe they get lucky in the draft, okay? And I'm not saying that Damian Lillard was a big surprise, but Damian Lillard came to them from Weber State. C.J. McCollum came to them from that basketball powerhouse, Bucknell, okay? And so maybe they get lucky. I would be shocked if you didn't see them go for some 6'7", 6'8". You know, they need somebody like Ja Morant, but they're not going to get him because he's going to go with the second pick. But that's, no, it's an interesting question because, yes, you always look at teams like Portland and say, is this their ceiling? Is this their up right now? It didn't happen that way with the Bucks. The Bucks just kept going up and up and up. And you wonder if making the conference semifinals is as good as it's going to be for the Portland Trailblazers.
I'm looking at this a little bit differently. Nobody expected the Portland Trailblazers to do what they did this year. They were not, at the beginning of the season, picked to go anywhere near where they ended up. They got into the playoffs and absolutely ripped apart the two teams they played before they had to play the greatest team of our generation here. Okay, we forget that. They got rid of the Thunder with a fantastic shot. They neutralized the Denver Nuggets, who were a team that everybody was very impressed with. They beat two really good teams and got into the conference finals on a year when they lost Yusuf Nurkic, remember, to the car accident early on. And a lot of people thought, well, they're just forget this year for them. So I look at them as taking a lot of positives out of this. I mean,
They win 53 games. I mean, they won the same amount of games as the Houston Rockets did. And guess what? The Houston Rockets wish they'd won one. We talked about this the other day. They wish they'd won one more because the playoffs might have looked completely different for them.
But they, even more than winning the same games as Houston, then they put their foot down on the pedal when they got into the playoffs. Their first two rounds were really impressive. They just ran into a brick truck. I mean, I don't think anybody's getting three games off of the Golden State Warriors. I don't care who comes out of the East. I think it's at best a six-game series, and that's going to be it. And it could very well be a sweep, given the fact that both of the teams that could come out of the East to face the Warriors are going to be first-time teams there in forever, and they're going to be a little starstruck by the whole experience, whereas Golden State is just there to win the thing and go home. So I actually think there's a lot of upside to Portland, and I think that they were invigorated, and if they get Nurkic back, and you know, like you say, pick up a free agent here, they are. I think they're very promising. I don't look at this as a disappointment for them. Everybody's got a to-do list: drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea: let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to Geico.com, and in 15 minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You got extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do that you do today.
Robert, when you look at the Bucks and the Raptors, and again, I think I might have, you know, in my mind, spiked the ball too early on the Bucks because the Raptors really showed me something in the last two games. And their season's hanging by a thread in double overtime the other day, and they win that game, okay? But I agree with Mitch. I just cannot imagine that the NBA Finals will go seven games this year.
No, especially they're going to have to. They're in a best out of three right now, so it's not like the Bucks swept and then we said, oh, maybe they got a puncher's chance, and they're both going to have enough time to rest. It's a best out of three now. More than likely, it's going to go all three games because everybody's holding serve. In which case, I imagine maybe Golden State might be a little rusty for the first quarter. You know, that's usually what happens with a long layoff. The first quarter, maybe the first half, there's a layoff, and then it's going to be a steamroller because I just think they're going through the maturation process of getting to a final. Just like Portland just got a maturation process of getting to the semifinal.
Pat Riley used to call it the innocent climb. That's what he called it in one of his
books.
Right.
It's innocent learning. Climb. As we call it, it's just like learning how to win, right. Learning what it takes to win each step of the way. And when you get to the finals, that's a whole different kettle of fish for a team that's never been there, either of them. So, no, I don't see either of these teams. You know, five is as max as I can see it going.
Well, Mitch, Kawhi has enough, whatever he's battling through right now, do you think Kawhi has enough to win a best of three series and surprise us by taking the Raptors to the finals?
Well, I don't know. You know, Milwaukee looked really strong in the first two games. And what we have to find out is, has Toronto figured out how to beat them? And the defense that they're putting on Giannis and the wall that they're putting up against him, is that the killing blow? In which case, they're going to win the next two games. They're going to win this series 4-2. And we've seen series go like that, by the way. I mean, some series is home team wins two, home team wins two, home team wins one, home team wins one. It's like that. And sometimes it's home team wins two, and then next team wins two, and they're not winning because they're home. They're winning because they figured out how to win, and they win four straight. Many series go that way. And right now, you would lean towards that because it looks like Toronto has figured out how to beat Milwaukee. How to put up the defense.
How to not
against
let Giannis kill him, Mitch.
Right.
How to let Giannis not take the game over.
And the other guys on that team are just not stepping up the way they need to. Whereas I think that the opposite is true for Toronto. Look at the, 46 points off the bench that they got in game four. You know, they are complementing Kawhi Leonard better. Now, we'll find out. I mean, obviously, we'll find out tonight if Toronto takes a breath and Milwaukee suddenly comes back strong. I think Kawhi Leonard is the bigger challenge to the Golden State Warriors. I think his experience and all that is, but I think no matter who it is, we're still looking at teams that are neutralizable, if I can invent a word, if you take out their star player. And there are just too many defensive opportunities, the way the Golden State Warriors play good defense, to go against them with one player. You know, now LeBron took them, you know, so I know people can say, well, what about LeBron? But there were other guys on those teams. And LeBron is different. I mean, LeBron really is unstoppable when he at least was at the top of his game. Kawhi Leonard is not unstoppable in that way. He's just going to command so much of your defense that he's going to draw things. And you see what they're doing now. You know, he'll drive in and then he'll swing it out and he'll give it to another guy. And it's Brogdon or Hill or Van Fleet or one of these guys and they'll score. I think Golden State will be able to handle that, but I think he'd be the tougher challenge.
All right, listen, we're now going to segue into what I, in my mind, I think of as the show business element of our show today. This will involve the reality series that is the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wait, no, I thought you were. I thought we were going to go someplace else, and we have.
No, we're talking about Toronto.
We're going
to get to Toronto, but before we do, since we have such a fine actor in our midst, in Robert Wool, and I meant to mention this earlier in the podcast. Did anybody besides me watch the All in the Family Jefferson special last night in front of a live audience?
I taped it. I didn't get a chance to watch it. Let me just tell you this.
Okay, it was great. Norman Lear is 96 years old, and he was Jimmy Kimmel's co-host. And everybody who showed up, they showed up. Woody Harrelson as Archie Bunker. Jamie Foxx was unbelievable as George Jefferson. But Mitch, as a musician, you know the moment in front of that live audience that brought down the house?
What's that?
Jennifer Hudson came out to sing the Jeffersons theme song. Moving on up, and just absolutely blew the doors off the play. If for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, because I was wondering how this was going to work, Marissa Tomei.
It sounds like a crazy idea. When
it
I heard
does,
it,
but
I said,
let me
really?
Tell you something.
The writing.
And do you remember the mixed race couple from the Jeffersons, Franklin Covey and Roxy Roker? Do you know who they were played by, Robert, last night?
No. Who did it?
Will Ferrell and Kerry Washington. And when they came walking, and the live audience even made it, there's a place where Jamie Foxx flubs a line and he just goes, live television. Everybody thinks their television just stopped working. He just spun around and went right back into the scene. I urge you to see it because they took a big swing last night, and I believe they hit the ball out
what
of the park.
What was that? What network was that on?
It was on ABC. I think Kimmel was the driving force behind this.
Must have been.
Because
why isn't it on CBS?
A dear friend of mine, Norman Lear, lives in his building in New York City at the age of 96. And you know where my friend sees him every day? In the gym.
Huh. Oh, he's amazing. He's amazing.
He's a force of nature. Okay, now, Mitch, again, we're in the show business segment.
Yes.
And you've spent a lot of your life, as Robert has, in the world of show business. And I was just wondering, I was just wondering this the other day. How have you enjoyed Drake's performance in the Raptors games?
Well, you know what you're doing, Michael, because you're just holding a red cape out in the middle of the bull ring to me. You're going, come here, boy. Look at the red. Because that is what I see when I see Drake out there. And I don't care anything about his music, and I don't care anything about his loyal fans. And as someone who lives closer to Canada than anybody else on this show, I don't even care about the Canadian loyalty to him. He is a total embarrassment to himself, to that city, to the country, and to the game. And who the hell is letting him massage the back of the Raptors coach as if he's the team masseuse, or inserting himself into arguments, or coming sitting basically on the bench? He might as well be drawing up plays or trolling Giannis as if he's a member of the, you know, he should put on the mascot outfit and start.
He's
dancing
a hood ornament. That's exactly what he is, Mitch. He's a hood ornament. And when I said to Mitch earlier when we got ready to do the podcast, you know, I come out of what I like to think of as the Spike Lee era at Madison Square Garden, and Mitch snapped at me and he said he never gave a coach a back rub.
That's right. Even Spike Lee knew that would look ridiculous. See if you can back rub Phil Jackson or something. Come on. Where's the emperor's clothes on this thing? Why is the NBA putting up with this garbage? This guy is so full of himself.
They think they I'm not signing off on this. They think that it's like so cutting edge to have the big singer on the court like that. But Robert, there's a great line in one of the great best written movies of all time. One of the great movies ever written about show business. It's all about Eve. And Gary Merrill, the playwright, is having a big fight with his wife or ex-wife, Betty Davis, the diva actress.
Margot Channing.
And he at one point, he talks about the piano that thinks it wrote the concerto. Okay.
Right.
And even though Drake is a musician, he has decided that people have come to watch him Drake at these. Yeah. It's a verb now. They've come to watch him Drake at these games, Robert.
Being writers, journalists here, and in honor of William Goldman, I want to credit the screenwriter of All About Eve, the great Joseph Mankiewicz, first of all.
Yeah, yeah.
And secondly, you hit it on the head when you talked about they think it's cool. They think it's we talk about being of today. You know, it's cutting edge. We live in the social media. Did you see what Drake did? People don't know basketball. They know Drake. They'll watch, hey, Drake's giving the guy a back rub. As a sports fan, I'm with Mitch. I'm totally with Mitch on all this stuff. But it's become, you know, it's the entertainment world. It's the, Mike, you said it on the head. You think they think it's cool. They think it's, and until, I mean, the sports writers will, but until the public turns against it, or no, he does something, or he does something really stupid.
I'm going to take offense with one thing you're saying, though. Not until the public does it. Where's the league? Okay, if Joe Joe Schmo fan gets up and tries to give the Toronto coach a back rub, he's carried out by security and his tickets are taken away and he can't come back. Now, how is Drake any different than that? Is he literally a member of the team? Because if he isn't, you're basically saying, well, this guy's more important than you are. He's cooler than you are. We'll let him go on the court. We'll let him violate every single rule that we have in the league where fans cannot go on the court. Fans cannot interfere with play. Fans cannot touch a player. You touch a player as a fan, you are out of there. I don't care if it's a love touch or any other kind of touch. And you know, unless a player holds his hand out and wants to slap it as he's walking down the tunnel, but not in the middle of the game. So it's not about when the public gets tired of it. It's when the NBA gets tired of it. And this, to me, is a great hypocrisy of it because Mitch, Adam Silver is not going to do anything.
Oh, no.
Because Drake helps sell NBA tickets.
There you go.
Mitch, I know that Nick Nurse was in a bad spot there, okay? But he looked really bad. He looked really bad because somehow a fan, and I don't care how much music he's made, okay? A fan turned him into a prop, okay? A fan did that. A fan acted like he was more a part of the game than the head coach of the basketball team.
Right.
That was a shame to me.
Right. Right.
Giving Canada a bad name is Drake. For full balance and being fairness, how great is Alex Trebek?
Okay, on the other, well, you know, you don't need to balance one Canadian with another Canadian. You know, come on.
I'm watching him last night.
My man Holzhauer, he keeps rolling
it's
along.
Amazing.
He knows everything. Mitch, he knows everything. He knows everything.
It's amazing. Everything.
Kronos knows that many organizations maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, and part-time workers, for them, it can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge and are empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every single step of the way. Learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them, because Kronos is at heart a people business, at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. All right, now let's get to, and both of you have spent more time. I'm actually spending more time in Los Angeles now because I have a son living there. You guys have spent a lot of time there.
Sorry to hear that, Mike.
Is there a better, and I by better, you know, good, bad, oh, you know what I'm talking about. Is there a more raging reality series in the NBA right now than Jeannie Buss's and Rob Pelinka's and LeBron James and formerly Magic Johnson's LA Lakers?
It's great. You know, LeBron James, first of all, to me is one of the most interesting athletes of all time. By far, I mean, thinking that this guy is at a camera in his face since he's been 15 years old, everywhere he's gone, and he's gone up and now he has stayed with the guys who he grew up with, which is usually a recipe for disaster, and yet, that we know of, he's never been in any trouble off the court that I know of. I mean, I don't remember any, maybe it's been covered up, but I mean, I can't believe he's in Miami for all those years and TMZ doesn't have five cameras on him. The fact that this guy is so interesting to me and what he's done, and now he's playing.
And where
in the
he's going to go now, Robert. That's even more interesting than ever. What happens to his career now?
Well, I said last night, my buddy, just as we're talking here, just emailed me a story that he and Anthony Davis had dinner last night together. So, wow, that means a lot. And
not if the Pelicans won't trade him, it doesn't.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Davis seems to keep forgetting that he doesn't control his own fate.
He belongs to another, Mitch.
At the moment, the Lakers have done something absolutely stunning. They have actually made people feel sorry for LeBron James being stuck in Los Angeles. I didn't think that was humanly possible.
That's actually true.
You read all these stories. God. Poor LeBron stuck there. He should demand to get out of there. Just a year ago, it was like, oh, there goes LeBron, you know, steering himself out of Cleveland. Of course, he's going to go to L.A. He's got to be Mr. L.A. Of course, he's going to be the Lakers and Magic. And now people feel sorry for him being stuck in this mess. That's how dysfunctional the Lakers front office is. People are sympathetic to poor LeBron James being stuck in Lakerland.
He's just a kid trying to get ahead in Tinseltown, Mitch. Can't you see that?
Just got off the bus.
He's like a young actress off the bus from Peoria and just looking to find his way.
Just a kid from Akron.
Just a kid from Akron. Thank you very much, Mitch. Yeah. And you can't find the empathy to for his trials and tribulations. But let me tell you what. We've talked about this before, Robert. What indication have you ever gotten from Jeannie Buss, Rob Pelinka, now we hear Kurt Rambis, Mrs. Rambis, and Phil Jackson? Phil Jackson's involved. Oh, good, because he did such a great job running the New York Knicks.
It's not a good situation. It's a shame, too. I mean, I've known Jeannie Buss for a very long time. And
Was she in Arliss? Was she ever in Arliss? I can't remember.
Geez, that's a great question. I think she may have been.
When you said that, I could actually picture her in Arliss, but I may be wrong about that.
We do have an Arliss alumni who is going to be spoken of later in the parting shots from Mitch. But was she in Arliss? I mean, Kurt Rambis was. I don't think Mrs. Rambis was.
wasn't much call for it back.
Well, had I known, I would have given her a big part.
Well,
go ahead.
Who's going to play with LeBron James? This is what I want to know.
You keep asking that. It's a good question.
You know, here's the. I might as well throw out the impossible, because already with Magic Johnson quitting, with them not making the playoffs, with Johnson now verbally stating on a national TV show that Rob Pelinka is a backstabber, you know, which is Magic is a very intelligent guy. He doesn't go release comments unless there is a reason that he wanted them released. And so with all that going on, is it possible that nobody comes to play with LeBron James? Is it possible that they look at the dysfunction of that franchise and that all the top guys, I'm not saying some loose free agent here or there, I'm talking about Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, you know, pick the five top guys, that all of them end up someplace else, and LeBron looks to his right and sees a bunch of 12-year-olds that he's still got to play with and is wondering, what the hell happened? I thought we were going to build a super team. Is that possible that people don't want to go to Los Angeles, or if they do, they want to go play for the Clippers?
All right, so here's a rough list, okay? And I'm gonna leave some guys out and you guys help me, okay? Guys who are going to be out there this summer are Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard. We don't know what the status of Anthony Davis is going to be. Kemba Walker, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving. You wonder which one of them thinks they put themselves in the best position to win by going to the Lakers. And Mitch and Robert, you've heard me say this. Anybody who thinks about going to the Knicks better get in a conference room with James Dolan, Steve Mills, Scott Perry, and David Fizdale, the coach, okay? And anybody who's thinking of running off and joining the circus at the Staples Center ought to get in a room with Jeannie and Rob and whoever else is.
And Frank Vogel. Star coach.
Yeah, and so because...
And Jason Kidd, who's the Prince of Wales,
right? Coach.
The Prince of Wales.
Right.
No, this is going to be as interesting a summer as there has ever been for the Los Angeles Lakers. And we've talked about this the whole season, at least since we saw that the Clippers almost had rebranded themselves from the trade deadline on, and even came from 31 points down one night to beat the Warriors in a playoff game. To me, the Clippers are a much better bet to get some of these guys than the Lakers are.
Well, the only factor that changes that, Mike, is money. Who has, you know, that is
Thank
the one
you.
Thing that will turn people's heads. If you've got enough money to offer somebody, you know, guys will go play in Jakarta if they have to, if you've got
right.
that kind of money. And the Lakers do have money, and they've got the fourth draft pick in the upcoming
right.
draft that they can package in some way. But of the guys that you just mentioned to me, now I'm not in their heads, this is just outside observation, there's only one that wants to go there. And that's the one that can't control his own fate. That's Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis, yeah.
Other than that, I don't think Kyrie Irving really wants to go back and play with Magic Johnson, LeBron James. Didn't he just get done leaving Cleveland because there was no, it wasn't a big enough team for the two of them? And Kyrie Irving, God knows, I mean, who knows what his motivation is. He could announce that he's going to play in Australia. He's off the wall. But I don't think he's going to play with LeBron. I don't think Kevin Durant wants to share a spotlight
Oh, no,
with
I don't
LeBron
think,
James.
I don't think there's any chance.
I think
chance.
That's a non-starter. Okay,
yeah,
there's your two biggest guys. I don't think Kawhi Leonard wants to share a spotlight with LeBron James. So that's your three biggest guys. Klay Thompson, if he looks at going to Los Angeles versus staying where he is and says, okay, do I like winning championships or do I like just, you know, getting a ball and shooting it? You got to say he'd be crazy to go to Los Angeles if he can stay there and be part of that dynasty. So there are your top guys except Anthony Davis, who if he is insistent to his management and say, look, I am not playing for you guys. You can bring me back next year and I'll fake an injury. I don't care. If he makes it that kind of apparent, then maybe they package that fourth draft pick and a couple of your young players, and the New Orleans Pelicans just say, okay, we're going to start with Zion Williamson and everybody else on our team's going to be 20 or 21 years old and we'll just build together. That's the only scenario I can see.
All right.
Well, I'm going to go back to something Mitch said right off the top, but it's about the money. When everybody, it's the old line, which they tell you it's not about the money, it's about the money. These guys, there'll be somebody who goes to the Lakers. There will be. And for all I know, at this point, like you just said, Klay Thompson said, do I want to stay and win championships or go where I'm going to get played maybe twice as much? He's already got a bunch of championships. So, to me, they'll get somebody. I agree with Michael, it's going to be crazy, but they will get somebody.
All right, listen, moving on. Let's just spend a few minutes on a baseball. We're moving up to Memorial Day weekend in baseball. And we were talking about this before we started today. Right now, the key to the way teams lay out, especially in the American League, is how you're doing against all the bad baseball. And Mitch knows a lot about bad baseball because he lives in Detroit.
Ouch.
And you look at, I looked this up this morning, sub 500 teams, the Astros are 16-3. The Yankees are like 23-7. The Twins are 24-8. The Rays are 18-8. The Red Sox are only 21-15. So if you can't, you know, it does seem sometimes like the Yankees play the Orioles every single night, okay? Mm-hmm. But they all have played pretty much the same amount of games against bad teams. And Mitch, if you don't beat up on them, it'll come back and bite you in the ass in September.
Yeah, you make an excellent point, Mike. There's more bad baseball
right
now. A lot
of bad baseball.
Than
yeah.
I can remember. There's Kansas City and Detroit and Baltimore, they're bad. And you're right. If you're getting them when they're down, you've got to sweep those series. You know, you can't go 2-1 or even 1-2. You got to take all three because, if other teams are doing it, that might be the margin of difference in this thing because they're going to neutralize each other. They're going to play each other a lot
right.
at top level. But yeah, when you told me that 21-15 versus whatever, you know, 30, who
the worst record of anybody, the worst record of anybody else against those teams is the Rays at 10 games over 500, Mitch. And so it right now it's making a huge difference in the way the standings look in the American League.
Yeah. The thing, I mean, I happened to be with Brian Cashman the other day, and I was saying, I just have never seen this many bad baseball teams in my life. And he said, yeah, I know. I want to take advantage of it as much as we can while we're hurt.
Right.
And the fact is, in the American League, there's, what is it, five teams? for five spots, six teams for five spots, really? You got the three in the East. You got, I think Minnesota's going to win the Central, which is a really good story, by the way, the Minnesota Twins. Cleveland, will they make a charge? Maybe, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. There's seven back now. Houston is a runaway.
There's four teams right now, and obviously we've only been moving up on a 50-game season, okay? Mm-hmm. But there's four teams right now in a pack, okay, for the second wild card in the American League. And I wrote a column today for MLB.com, and I said, the Red Sox got to pick it up a little. They've played better lately, but if they don't watch it, they have a series on the road coming up against the Astros this weekend. They have a series on the road against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. They could easily find themselves 10 games behind the Yankees already. And so this thing is so incredibly fluid. But right now, the A's are there, the Indians are there, the Texas Rangers are probably the surprise team of the league, and the Red Sox are there. And the Red Sox, I watched the game last night. The Red Sox had like four late inning leads against the Blue Jays in Toronto and didn't win until the kid Chavis hit a home run in the 13th inning.
Can I ask a question for our New York guys there? How are the Yankees doing what they're doing? Isn't their entire team in a mash unit?
CeCe went on the IL today.
CeCe Sabathia went on the IL today. I think that makes 18 players this year. My math might be off. I'm telling you, so far this has been like Brian Cashman's finest hour. Gio Urshela at third base. Okay, yep. Mitch, they go get Cameron Maybin, and he comes to the Yankees and starts to hit. Okay.
Judge, another guy we gave up on.
Judge, they don't know when he's coming back. Stanton keeps having setbacks in rehab. Didi Gregorius, the wonderful shortstop, had Tommy John surgery last year. He's going to come back eventually. Aaron Hicks, their starting center fielder. No, what they have done is shocking. It's shocking. And at a time, Mitch, when the Red Sox have really only had one significant injury to Nathan Eovaldi. Okay, and the Yankees have lost one of their star bullpen guys, Dellin Betances, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. One of those guys hit 59 home runs in a season. The other hit 52 in a season. They lost a kid who it showed he could absolutely come into New York and do the job at shortstop after Derek Jeter. And no, and they've got a kid behind the plate who's one of the secret home run stars of baseball in Gary Sanchez.
Oh, well, there's something else, too. Funny that you say, my wife broke her ankle yesterday, and I happened to get an appointment with the Yankee team doctor who looked at her, and I asked him the same question. Have you ever seen anything like this? And he says, not while we're winning, I haven't. And
yeah, it's true.
But here's something that any New York fan who's watching the games is loving. The Yankees have struck out 50 less times to this point than they did last year at the same time, and that's Judge and that's Stanton.
Stanton killed him in the playoffs.
Wise men said to me, one of the smartest guys when I grew up, home runs don't win championships. Two-out base hits win championships. And I'll swear to that to my dying day. And that's what's going on with the Yankees. They're putting the bat on the ball, just like Houston did a few years ago and everything else.
Like the Red Sox did against them in the playoffs. The Red Sox, up and down their batting order, have guys who put the ball in play.
Two-out base. How many times have we seen in the playoffs a guy on third base, one out, and he doesn't get in? Always. Two-out base hits win championships.
See, I think Stanton's an albatross, Robert. I do. I think that if you gave him truth serum and he had to do it all over again, he would not have done it. They're locked into him for like 9 more years, and he is the face of it's either a home run or a strikeout. And you go back to their series against the Red Sox last October, and he was up. I forget how many base runners he left on the base with strikeouts in big moments.
They also didn't pitch very well. They didn't pitch as well as the Red Sox also last year. But yes, this is what. But again, going back to the bad baseball teams, it is. And I think we're seeing. If you also notice who are these teams that are winning, it's big market teams. You're looking at the Yankees. You're looking at Boston. You're looking at
the Dodgers.
You're looking at Dodgers. You're looking at Chicago. The Cubs. You're looking at. You know, these are big market. It's kind of going back to that a little bit.
Hey, Mitch,
long season to go.
Mitch, let me ask you this because I know what a great baseball place Detroit is. Okay, and I happen to love Comerica Park. And, you know, they had a great run for a long time, and they just were snake bit in a couple of World Series. How soon do they say the future is coming with the Tigers? What are they selling people? Because I can't believe they're selling a whole lot of tickets.
They're not. They're not selling a lot of tickets. And, you know, Ron Gardenhire is a good cheerleader, but people are kind of turning a deaf ear to him now. A lot of the young guys that they traded. I mean, here was the season in a microcosm. Justin Verlander came to town with the Houston Astros, pitched against the Tigers, and, you know, of course, shut them down easily. Probably could have done it with a hand tied behind his back. And there was, you know, he interviewed and he talked a lot about, you know, how this is always going to be his home and all the rest of it. But then he left town with the team. And they did an analysis of the guys that they traded Justin Verlander for, you know, all prospects. And, you know, one of them.
Well, that's interesting. How are they doing?
One got hurt and basically is history. One is not advancing as quickly as he should, and one is slowly coming along. You know, none of them are about to come up and make any kind of noise. And it just goes to show you, and we've talked about this in other sports as well, but I find in baseball it's almost unique, the folly of being able to predict the future of prospects when trading away bona fide, proven major league players. And they've done that. Of course, they did it with so many guys. You know, the Tigers cleared their roster. They gave away everybody they had from Verlander and Martinez and all, you know, everybody who was any good to try to save money. But okay, if you try to save money, you do it by getting prospects, but you don't go do it by getting lousy prospects. You do it hopefully by getting great prospects, and nobody yet has really come through. Their best chances, you know, they had the number one pick in the draft, the kid Mize, and he's a pitcher, and you know, he's coming along. But it's at least 2 to 3 years before these guys are going to do anything.
Mitch,
and that's a long time in a major market.
You've seen this, Robert. We've seen a lot of big trade deadline moves in history. The one for Verlander is one of the most significant in recent baseball history. They would not have won the World Series without him. They thought they were going to win a World Series with him last year, and I wouldn't be shocked if he pitches them to another World Series this year. That deal is the deal that everybody hopes they make at the deadline for a big player. They found him at a perfect point in his contract, in his career, and they went for it, and they got him. And he was spectacular for the Astros. He did lose Game 5 against the Red Sox last year. And now, Mitch, he's pitching like he's 28 years old again.
Yeah. Well, everybody knew that here. Everybody knew that Justin Verlander was expensive, but Justin Verlander was made of the real material. You know, he was a warrior, and he was going to play a long time. He was one of those pitchers earlier in his career, and he still does it every now and then, that would pitch faster and harder in the sixth, seventh, and eighth innings than he did in the first, second, and third. Those are freaks. And those kind of guys you hang on to. And it was all because of money and all because of, you know, when they had blown their opportunity to win the World Series, the last chance when Mike Gillich was here and was still alive. And they just were cleaning house. And, you know, they jumped at a thing. But look at what, you know, you traded away I wouldn't call him generational pitcher, but he's certainly
pretty close,
and he's a Hall of Famer. And you're trading him away for a bag of beans that were supposed to grow into a beanstalk. And now, like I said, you know, one of them got an injury, and he's probably never going to develop into anything. That's one of three, and the other two are question marks. And you say, wait a minute, we gave away Justin Verlander for what? So it's a hard sell for a town like Detroit that is used to, you know, this has always been a great baseball town, and they're used to really at least being in the thick of things. And Robert, you mentioned striking out, and while you guys were talking, I looked it up, and guess who leads the league in strikeouts per game? The two top teams, Seattle and Detroit, both of whom are at or near the bottom, you know, averaging about 10 strikeouts a game. And so you're absolutely right. It's not about necessarily just hitting the home runs. It's also about not striking out, and Tigers are doing too much of that, literally and figuratively.
Before we get to parting shots, Robert Wool, our dear friend, actually has two parting shots today because his hair is a little bit on fire because of the lack of effort he has seen from the team that plays on the other side of New York City, the Mets.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people know about, they saw the replays of Robinson Cano 2 days in a row not running out ground balls. Now, right. He never ran out ground balls when he was with the Yankees. He never ran them out. This one, he didn't move on. I actually think the one at home plate was one of those things where it was right in front of home plate. He thought it was foul. By the time he realized it was fair, he ain't going anywhere.
I actually thought it was. I know you're supposed to run whether you know or not. I actually thought it was foul, too. Didn't you? It looked like it hit behind the plate.
I thought usually it's foul. Usually it's foul, and by the time guy picks it up, what's he going to do, run 3 feet? I mean, it's like, but the fact was he had done it the day before also. But the bigger problem to me wasn't just that. It's how, it was a blowback on, did you bench him? Are you going to do this? I mean, this guy has made already $150 million in baseball. He's got another $100 guaranteed. My question is a bigger question. How do you deal discipline with a guy who's making $200 million. I mean, in today's society, how do you do that? I think that's a real tough thing for today's managers, owners. I mean, the Mets have dug themselves this hole, by the way. Always it goes back to me with ownership. I mean, Mitch, you were talking about the Tigers. When Ilyich died, things changed. I mean, he didn't care. He wanted to spend money, he'd win. For Steinbrenner, things changed. When you have the owner spending money, as the Houston owner would spend money now, things change. And by the way, Mitch, to your point earlier about transferring big-time pitchers, this trading deadline, look for Mad Bum and possibly Scherzer both to be moved. Mm. So that changes the paradigm.
And I wouldn't be surprised. Robert, I'll say this, okay? The Mets in recent years threw a bloody fortune at David Wright. How did that work out? And they've now thrown a bloody fortune at a guy who hit them into the World Series in 2015, Yoenis Cespedes, and how did that work out? Okay, so they lavished huge contracts, ended up with the return that you know the guy. Wright's out of baseball, and Cespedes is going to be out of baseball soon.
Now, parting shots.
Okay, I'll say it. The greatest basketball player of all time isn't Michael Jordan. It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And it's not even close. How can you say that? Michael has 6 titles. So does Kareem on 2 different teams. Michael was a 5-time MVP. Kareem was 6 on 2 different teams. Oh, did I mention that to this day, 30 years after his retirement, Kareem is still the all-time NBA scoring leader, 3rd in rebounds, 3rd in block shots, and the creator of the most devastating weapon in the history of basketball, the skyhook. But wait, there's more. That's just Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Now let's talk Lou Alcindor, the greatest college basketball player of all time, probably the greatest high school basketball player of all time, and someone, unlike other athletes, who stuck his neck out big time, boycotting the 1968 Olympics, fighting for civil rights alongside Muhammad Ali, Bill Russell, Jim Brown. Sorry, not sorry. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was not only a better basketball player than MG, he's a more important one.
And you know what else, Robert? I'll tell you this. Right. You know how many titles Magic Johnson won without Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and his basketball team? 0. We aren't even at Memorial Day yet, and Mike Trout, the best player in baseball and the best all-around player since Willie Mays, is already 10 games out of first place. Trout has only played 3 postseason games in his career and hit 1 postseason home run. That's it. It would be like if LeBron had only seen the playoffs 1 time at this stage of his career, even playing a vastly different sport. Trout already has 11 home runs this season, recently got to 250 home runs at warp speed, has an OPS, of course, of 1.034. He's only hitting .289 right now, but you know that won't last. But you've heard me talk about this before. Trout is far and away the greatest star in American sports that no one sees. This happened in the Wayback Machine in baseball when Ernie Banks wasn't making the postseason with the Cubs and the great Al Kaline didn't make the one and only World Series of his career until 1968, his 15th year in the big leagues. It happened a lot more when the playoffs were a lot less available than they are now. Trout, of course, is still young. He's going to be with the Angels forever. But playing on bad and mediocre teams must be really getting old for the LeBron of baseball.
When does a guy who has never been a head coach and has never been any kind of a college coach make sense for a major college program to hire? When they don't have a lot of other choices, that's when. Michigan welcomed back Juwan Howard, the most serious member of the famed Fab Five group, by making him the successor to John Beilein, who surprisingly left them a few weeks ago. Howard, now 46, played a long time in the NBA and was the only Fab Five player to ever win a championship ring, which he got at age 39 with LeBron and the Heat. Since then, he's been on the Miami bench, retiring as a player and becoming an assistant coach. He now takes over a Wolverine program that went to two Final Fours under Beilein, and it is a huge leap. Howard was never recruited a college kid in his life. He's never called a timeout in a game as a head coach in his life. But the Michigan AD Ward Manuel apparently saw something in Howard when they interviewed. A seriousness, a work ethic, a lot of experience working with young kids on the Miami roster who were pretty much college-aged. Now, it's true the Fab Five don't mean to today's kids what Jalen Rose or Chris Webber would like you to believe they do. In fact, they're pretty much black and white Super 8 footage to today's kids. But Howard was always the most studious of that group, the X and O guy, the guy determined to get it right. He once famously stomped down a hallway when Michigan made the Final Four his freshman year and proclaimed, "I told you we're going to shock the world." Well, the Fab Five fell just short of that. And now, 27 years later, Howard gets a second chance at shocking everybody. We'll see how it goes. That's going to wrap things up for today's edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Thursday. Monday and Thursday, right, Mike?
Oh, yeah,
Monday
God. And Thursday. Yeah, yeah, blah, 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 blah.
Means we'll be back next week with another edition. If you like the program, tell your friends and make note that they can get it on the Stitcher platform along with every other place you can get a popular podcast. Until we see you again, on behalf of the great Robert Wool and the great Mike Lupica. Here, I'm in the back seat. Get the donuts.
Starsky and Hutch.
This is Mitch Albom saying, have a great holiday weekend.